Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, shall we podcast?
Shall we podcast?
Podcast. We're talking about a movie today from 1996. It's called Shall We Dance? And it says here, Shall We Dansu? As the original title. It is a Japanese film directed by Masayuki Suo. I hope I'm doing him justice.
Yes. We apologize for all the mispronunciation of any Japanese words.
Yes. So it was delightful.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it.
Yes, I thought it was great. Yeah, I mean, it was funny. It was dramatic. There was lots of dancing. I'm not much of a dancer myself, but I loved it. I thought it was great.
This is a movie that we saw, or I saw, under really unusual circumstances, because at one time our kids' grade school had an internship program. I guess that's what it was called. But it was really, they would just get these Japanese young ladies, one at a time for each school year, who were in their probably early to mid 20s, and they would come and they would stay with the third grade all year and teach them Japanese culture and then get to live in America. And they had to have somewhere to live. So you'd have the host family. And so one year I said, well, we'll be the host family, because otherwise there wasn't going to be a Japanese person. And we got the most delightful young lady named Maya. She was so wonderful. She was so enthusiastic about all things American that she helped me see our country with new eyes. So it was really great.
Oh, that is great.
And when she first got here, they were showing Shall We Dance at the Inwood Theater, which was, you know, just local art house theater. And so I said, let's go. And I invited a couple of my friends to go, and we all met there. And I said, have you seen it before? And she said, oh, yes, this is very famous in our country. And I'm like, oh. She says, I've seen it twice at the movies and once on TV. I found out later it had won 13 Japanese Academy Oscar-type awards. Like, for every category it possibly could, it swept them. Huh. And it only wasn't eligible here for best foreign language film because it had shown on Japanese TV right before the nominations were allowed, you know, so it was robbed basically. But the thing about watching it with her was she'd never watched it with a bunch of English speakers. And so things would happen that later on in the car on the way home, she's like, why did everyone laugh then?
Oh, really? Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, it's some of the jokes, like when it starts off and the credits come up and it's shall we in English and then the word dance is in Japanese. Well, you laugh because you don't expect it. She had never caught that joke.
Oh.
Or later when the detective is watching a dance competition and he says, oh, well, impoliteness, they're marked off for rudeness. You know, it's a British sport. We all laughed. Yeah. She's like, why was that funny? And we're like, oh, okay. That was really great that the director understood both cultures better than a Japanese person did. Mm. You know, it was just interesting to me that, oh, okay, well, I can explain this to you.
Yeah, yeah. How wonderful.
So anyway,
yeah,
it's been a family favorite ever since then, because it's so sweet. It's a misleading word, but you're left feeling it's sweet.
Yes, I agree. You know? That's a good word. Yeah, before we move on, I just wanted to say we hosted a Mexican young man one year. His name was Beto. So he was from Merida in Mexico. Mm. So yeah, okay. We lived in a really small town. And the way that happened is I don't know how they get connected to a town, but someone came to my door, someone that I knew, because we knew everybody in town, and they and they said, we have a young man who's looking for a Catholic family to stay with. And
Catholic?
Yeah.
Okay.
I said, well, okay. So we had them for a year, and it was great.
Oh, how
so
fun.
I just wanted to say that, too. So that's kind of funny. I didn't know that you had done that.
Yeah.
But it's a good experience, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good experience. And yeah, because we got to do things like, since Dallas is so large, and at that time, especially the tech community had a lot of Japanese people who'd be living here for 2 or 3 years before they'd get cycled back home. And we got invited to some Japanese spring festival or fall festival, some festival that they didn't let regular Americans come to. We were specifically told we were allowed because we were with Maya.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. And it was really
that's neat.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we had some experiences like that, but yeah, just Maya herself was so charming and wonderful. And we're still Facebook friends, and she went back to Japan and eventually got married, and she got to know both sides of our family. Like, you know, my in-laws just loved her to death, and Tom's whole family. And then she went and spent 2 weeks vacation with my parents at their house.
How neat.
Because we'd taken her traveling with us, and then they invited her back because they liked her so much.
That's great.
Yeah, so Mom will make comments on her, you know, pictures of her little boys on Facebook.
How nice.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, that's great. Our experience was good as well. And yeah, we still in contact with him. And yep, he's married now. So
yeah.
Yep, it's great. So highly
really
recommended, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, Shall We Dansu? Yeah, so what's it about?
So this is about a salary man, is the way you would say it. Basically, a guy who, he's an accountant. He works in an office without even any cubicles and with all kinds of lots of people in there. And it looks like his job isn't very interesting. And he has a long commute home on the train. And at one stop, he happens to be looking up and he sees a dance studio. And a young, beautiful woman is looking very wistfully or in a melancholy way out the window. And he becomes fascinated because this is a break she takes a lot. And so eventually he wants to meet her. So he gets really brave and goes to inquire about dance lessons. And they begin the movie by pointing out that in a society where married couples don't even hold hands in public, the idea of something like ballroom dancing where a stranger would actually hold you for this long and do these intimate moves with you is perverse. It's seen as perverted by a lot of people. So he is really having to step out on a limb. And it's about what he experiences when he goes through that door, takes the lessons, and also the fact that he hides it from his family. He's got a wife and a daughter.
Right.
And what happens when a pattern of being gone all the time happens? How does his wife act? I'm not sure what else to say.
No, you've said everything wonderfully. And yeah, there's a lot of comedy in it. And there's some seriousness in it. But yeah, it's outstanding.
Yeah, you would almost call it a romantic comedy, except that it's not a romantic comedy specifically, but in that same way, they show you all these insights into our interactions with each other.
Yeah, and that's what I would say that it's about.
Yeah. And you see a lot of also regular Japanese life without realizing it, the way he takes the train and then rides his bicycle home and back, the fact that he didn't get a house until he was 40, had to save up, and now has this crushing mortgage for this little house.
Right.
Those sorts of things.
Yeah, and that's a moment that I felt before, you know, so I really sympathized with him there. He's, you know, I recall a scene where he's at his desk and he's talking to a coworker, and he says, yeah, I've got a house now and everything. And he said something like, he's given his life to this company for a long, long time to pay for it. And he means into the future, not past.
Right.
So, and he feels it, you know. You know, I've felt that too. It's like, you know, the typical American way of, you know, okay, first you get this and then you get this and then you get that. You know, mm-hmm. there are times where you go, well, why do we do all that? You know, yeah. why isn't it, you know, a small house enough, or, you know, a car that barely makes it where you want to go? Why isn't that enough? mm-hmm. You know, why do I need a Suburban, you know, or, you know, who knows what for whoever. But, yeah, I've had those questioning moments, you know, often in my life.
Yeah, those
why do we do what we do? Yeah. Like, why, you know, everybody seems to find that this is important, but I don't, and I don't understand, you know, why is that not okay? Turns out that yeah. of course it is okay. But,
right.
It takes you a while to realize it.
Well, and what you see, I mean, he's not going around acting depressed or anything, but it isn't until he's taking these dancing classes and passes the point of the movie where he gets fully invested in it for its own sake. Mm-hmm. That you realize he's found something that's brought joy and a new measure of life to his own life. I mean, I don't think he realized himself that he was not living fully with any amount of joy. He was just going along like a lot of us do.
He was just going along.
He finds
along, right?
this thing that brings mm-hmm. him alive. And it's that coming alive that everybody in this movie who's struggling, and that's most of them, that's what they're struggling with. You know, his daughter's not struggling with it. She's a teenager or preteen. I can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
She's too young. The dance instructor, which is kind of like the mother of the movie. You know, she's this older lady.
She was very neat. I wonder what her story is, because she was so graceful.
I know. I loved her. Well, and yeah. she was one of the wise voices.
Mm-hmm. She was.
But she doesn't seem to have a struggle, although when she's looking very wistfully at one point, they're all kind of stopped looking at some people dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she says, oh, you should partner up with this person and do this contest. You kind of get the feeling it's tapping into something in her past. They don't say, mm-hmm. at least that's how I felt.
Yeah, I felt the same thing.
Yeah. And,
yeah, and then there was a moment when she was wistfully, you know, it was the Shall We Dance moment. Where
yes.
she was definitely feeling something very deep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As if, you know, something was past. But she never seemed unhappy to me.
No. She yeah. seemed serene, as if she kind of fought her past battles, and it didn't mean she couldn't look back and think about it and be nostalgic or apply it to a different situation. But she, and that's why she was motherly.
Right.
But you felt
so,
like
yeah, just so we're clear, for people who haven't seen the movie, this is not the same woman that was at the window.
No, no.
Yeah,
no.
She was an older woman. I'm looking at the cast list, and I'm afraid that I don't the names on either side are all Japanese, so I don't
yes.
know who's who. Other than Mai, right? Mai, M-A-I?
The young lady at the window.
Yeah, she's the young lady that was at the window. So she, you know, was looking out there wistfully, and that's who Shohei Sugiyama was the name of the character.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Sugiyama,
yeah,
that was it.
Mr. Sugiyama. And he went in there, and he met this woman that he hoped to meet, you know, right away. I mean, just going in the door, that was a funny moment, too.
Right.
Because yep.
he's so embarrassed, he can't make himself go in until mm-hmm. This real brash person, because, you know, of course, you meet all these people and they all have real distinctive features to their own personalities.
Yeah.
This real brash woman practically knocks him through the door, and that's just about right for her.
Right. And as you learn later, yeah, it was that's her personality. But yeah, and that was kind of a neat moment. He was shoved into the door. He
mm-hmm.
was. He had decided against it, but he was shoved through the door. And then
yeah.
he met this lady, and then pretty quickly found out that she would not be his teacher.
She's like, oh, I'll teach you in the group.
Yep.
Because it was going to be really expensive to have private lessons.
Right.
And you could see, it's interesting thinking back, you can see that Mai did not care at all about his experience or about the school, because she just says, okay, well, it'll be this much. And he's like, oh, that much? Oh, it's so expensive. And she's like, well, private lessons. She doesn't make any offer to help. And the older lady says, oh, well, they're the group lessons. They're much cheaper.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, she's, oh, well, okay, which one do you want? I mean, she doesn't care.
Yeah.
It's like going to Target, where somebody's just, you know, they're just passing the time till they can get out.
Right. Right. So, yeah, so he starts to go to the group lessons, and he's questioning himself the whole time, going, what am I doing? What am I doing? Mm-hmm. And his office mate, is that where he saw his office mate? I mean, when did he notice that his office mate had also been going to this
this is a really funny moment too. I mean, a lot of it is so light and funny. There's a guy at work who is obviously an oddball. He does things in a weird way. Every time he comes to a corner, he kind of pivots on one foot. He kind of holds himself still and pivots on one foot, and everybody makes fun of him behind his back. Not Mr. Sugiyama. He's too nice. Mm-hmm. But then later you see a couple that is practicing for a competition. It's this brash lady who pushed him through the door, and this guy who's dressed up like, was it Donnie Brazo or something? He's a famous Latin champion. So he has a wig that's just like his. It's this long hair, and he's very florid, exotic looking.
Man, I was laughing out loud.
Really bizarre. Mm-hmm. And at one point his wig falls off. He's like, Mr. Aoki? And it's that oddball guy. But as soon as they realize they have this bond, they go out to a bar, which is, you know, where you can really be free. If you're Japanese, that's going out to have a drink means you can say whatever you want because you're drinking. So it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the scene at the very beginning where he's going out with his office mates. And they're kind of being loud and everything. That's at least the way Maya explained it at the time. I don't know if it's changed, but that's part of that culture.
Okay.
You go out to work, you have drinks. Oh, you're not expected to be mannerly because you can't be. And you're under the influence. So that's how you kind of let off steam.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah. So they're continually, every so often, they're all going out so they can excitedly talk about dance lessons and stuff.
Right.
And that was a great moment. There were many great scenes because haven't you had something like that where it kind of takes over your waking life for a while?
Oh, sure.
Like, they'd show Mr. Sugiyama with his feet under the desk. He's practicing his dance steps. Yeah. And for me, it was when aerobic dancing was a big thing in the 80s or maybe late 70s. I can't remember. Anyway, early 80s. And I would do that. Well, that was the closest I'd ever come to dancing. And so I would hear this music. I would immediately, they're the dance moves. You know, I would do them in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
It was so great.
Yeah, for me, it would have to be theater.
Of course.
Practicing lines all the time. Right. Walking outside my office and just pacing, you know, just saying the lines. And then going back in there and working for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And this is funny, too, because this movie, my wife directed The King and I at the theater we used to be at.
Oh.
My son played the young boy in it,
mm-hmm.
and I did the lights and sound, and my daughter was wee, so she was probably five.
Oh,
so she was up with me in the sound booth.
So it was a family affair.
Oh, it was. This theater was always a family thing. You know, if it wasn't, I couldn't have done it. You know, it wouldn't have felt right about being gone so much, but. You know, that's part of what happens in this movie, too. I mean, he's gone. You're right. It takes him over, and he's gone, 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 gone. And his wife, of course, starts to suspect. Because not only that, but the shirts that she's washing have perfume on them.
Yes.
Yeah. So she's like, what is going on?
Yeah. And I guess it's not really spoiling anything to say that she gathers her courage and goes to a private detective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the private detective becomes an occasional character who's almost like a Greek chorus commenting on everything.
That's a good point. Yeah, like a Greek chorus. Yeah, he's just standing outside of everything watching.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to approve.
Well, he gets more and more intrigued with the whole dance culture, too.
Yeah.
So that even when he tells his wife, he doesn't tell her what the husband's doing. He just says, I don't think you have to worry about anything. Isn't that right?
Yeah. At the first. Yeah.
He goes, and then, but what happens is you start to see him hanging around the fringes all the time. He's watching a competition. He's, you know, and a young associate of his who seems to me to be like an apprentice or maybe a young operative.
Yeah.
Who he'll be asking questions and the detective will very knowledgeably say things like I was saying before. Oh, well, points off for rudeness. You know, it's a British sport.
Yeah, yeah.
So throughout,
you know, we should say this throughout the first part of the movie, or the first part of his lessons, he is still obviously completely smitten with Mai, right?
Oh, yes.
M-A-I. That's Mai.
Right.
So he's always looking at her while she's giving someone else private lessons. So he's doing his group thing, and he's getting better and better. And then the turning point comes when he's done with his lessons. Okay, sorry.
Go away, anybody who hasn't seen it.
Right,
okay.
Spoiler time. Apologies.
Sorry. Okay.
No, it is good. So the turning point comes when he decides to talk to her outside of the dance hall. And he asks her to go for food. He says, "I haven't eaten dinner yet. You know, will you come with me?" And she was quite surprised to see him. And, mm-hmm. you know, again, she seems to understand very quickly. And she tells him that she hopes that she is not the reason that he was coming to dance lessons. I thought that was a good moment.
Yeah, she says, I take dance very seriously. This is not disco. A disco,
right. You're not here to pick up women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's cut to the quick, of course, because that's exactly the reason he did join. So then he decides he'll show her.
Yeah. And that was, I'm thinking about that because that's exactly right. He continues to go because he doesn't want her to be right. He doesn't want mm-hmm. her to think that she's right, that was the only reason that he came.
Right.
But he's turned now. Now that he knows that she's not interested, the dance becomes the thing. He's there for the dancing. And then mm-hmm. that starts to really get inside him, I guess.
Yeah, and then he is partnered with, oh gosh, what was her name? The brash dancer who's trying to find a partner for the competition.
Yeah.
And so Mai has to tutor them
mm-hmm.
in some of the dancing. And that's when it's a real interesting corner that's turned there because he's so intent on trying to get it just right so that he can dance properly with his partner, that he stops being self-conscious around Mai as much gradually. And what happens is she's looking out. He's so absorbed in it that while he's waiting for the train, he'll be practicing his steps on the platform. Well, now instead of him looking out of the train and seeing her, she looks out the window one evening and she sees him.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes, we find out later, her perspective of not only him, but it makes her rethink dance because she's had her own personal tragedy. She doesn't have a partner. She was at a high level competition and in, oh gosh, where was it? It's in England.
Blackpool.
How could I have forgotten? Blackpool, which is, you know, where the big competition happens. And she talked about going there as a little kid and being so impressed. And that's when she wanted to start dancing. And there was an accident and her partner left her over it. And you see her trying to partner up with somebody else who's like, you can't just dance for the joy of dancing. Then you're missing the point. And so she's got her own problems connecting.
Mm-hmm.
And when she sees that, she says it starts to turn something loose in her that she realizes she's been holding it up to the wrong standards. She's not been thinking about it right.
Yeah.
Dancing for joy.
That's something, I mean, that spoke a lot to me too. You know, her watching him and him being so absorbed it's like, you know, he wanted to get the steps just right. But why did he want to get the steps just right? I mean, was it for himself or was it for his partner?
Mm-hmm.
And she started to see that he was the type of a person that she could trust.
Yeah.
And then she started to see that she never has trusted any partner. And that has been her problem the whole time.
that she danced only for herself mm-hmm. and not for the partnership.
Right.
And it was such a good analogy for so many things in life. I mean, marriage, which this is contrasted to his marriage because he isn't living wholeheartedly with his wife in terms of they're each living for themselves. They've lost that connection. But of course, in life too, you can't just live to yourself. You have to have community. Sometimes mm-hmm. one other person, sometimes many other people, but you have to allow yourself to trust or you don't get the full experience.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I hadn't broadened that out into kind of a life thing, but you're right. It really is that way. It's like, I don't know, when you go back to the theater, you know, when you have to trust other people, you can't do everything yourself. You can't possibly. Mm-hmm. So you always get to a point where, okay, I have to trust that that person's going to do that. You know, I mean, as a director, you mm-hmm. there comes a point where you have to trust and let them go. And as an actor, I mean, it's even greater because you have to trust. You know, once you start to do things like have flubbed lines, you know, once you've learned all your lines and now you're practicing without books or anything, and then you're with someone and you mess up and they recover. It's mm-hmm. almost a turning point because now the trust is complete. It's like, I'm no longer concerned that me messing up is going to screw up this play. Because now I've got a partner who's going to be able to do it. But then, you know, when you broaden it into life, you know, it's the same thing in business or in engineering, you know, which is what I do. You can't do everything yourself. You've got to be able to trust someone to do that piece while you do this piece. And then mm-hmm. you've got to marry those pieces together, you know, as a system, right?
Right.
And yeah, it's I love that point that, you know, you're making.
Well, and I was just thinking because my Catholic Women's Book Club the other day, our choice to read was Lumen Fide. It's probably saying that wrong too. Light of Faith, which mm-hmm. Pope Benedict began, and then when he retired, Pope Francis picked it up, finished it, put it out. And we were all struck by a lot of different things. But the thing that really we all brought up was there's a very important part in there where he talks about you can't experience faith alone. It can't just be you and God. Hmm. It is also about the community. The point that was being made in the encyclical was that we need other people to help us out. And it's not that you know, God will talk to you, but also what it said was, he says, he was talking about participating in the vision of another, meaning the different people that help us with our faith. And then he takes it into mothers and fathers and, you know, all the different people in our lives who bring us into a bigger vision, because we can't do everything ourselves. We don't contain a single history within ourselves. And we also don't contain all the knowledge within ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this dancing being more than the steps and for the joy of the music, this whole movie is people helping each other see that vision of something bigger.
Wow. I've got lots of thoughts. I mean, that's wonderful because, you know, I've described to you my journey before where, you know, you kind of bounce around at the top looking at all these various different things and being happy that, you know, you're so broad and you're seeing, you know, all these differences and all these different religions and everything. But it's not until you stop and go deep, you know, that's the way I've put it in the past, is if mm-hmm. you stop and you participate and you go deep. But yes. What you're telling me is that it's the participation that probably allows the depth, which is something that I really haven't considered. It's the participation in the community that allows things to solidify, maybe.
And that's exactly where he goes with that, actually. Wow, you are very intelligent.
No.
Or your experience and your intelligence. Because that's in that encyclical, they talk about, they take it through the family. Mm-hmm. How many things do we learn from our family and from our parents? And then, of course, once your kids get older, you start learning things from your kids, too.
Oh, and that for sure happens.
And just in books and stuff, but certainly you teach each other the ways of love.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So many different levels of love and joy and everything, which he's not experiencing here.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you take that and expand it into, he takes it and expands that into the sacraments. He goes, well, if the church is our family, because the church is God's bride, the church is our family, the sacraments are the touchstones that actually bring us into communion with each other, and the participation in them is the experience that brings us closer to each other and to God.
Wow. Well, that is going to be an object of a lot of contemplation for me, because, yeah, that's kind of changed the way that I view all that. But it feels correct to me.
Well, and it makes me think of dancing, because, you know, my husband and I have taken dance classes. And for instance, when they kept saying slow, slow, quick, quick, slow, my husband's like, oh my gosh, they're using the same words and cadence. Oh my gosh, I know the dance they're learning, you know. But it's the thing of, it all looks easy from the outside. It's when you get in there and you're in that classroom and they're rotating partners and stuff, and you're having to remember what you're doing. You're having to do it to the music. You're having to do it with a partner who may be really good and telling you what to do. I really, that one guy in the movie, I was like, I know you. Stay away from me. I don't want you to tell me that. what to do. And then, you know, the people who are not as good as you. So you're biting your tongue to keep from turning into that guy. But it's until you do it or participate in it, actually, you're not experiencing it. It changes you in a different way than just watching or talking about it or anything else. And I think that's part of that faith, the thing that they were saying in the Lumen Fidei about, you know, you've got to have community. You have to participate in all this stuff with other people, or you're like you're just doing it by yourself.
Right. Wow. No, this is really just blowing me away right now, because, I mean, it is so very true. I mean, that must have been why the whole movie rang true. I mean, again, if you go back to the theater to experience, I remember the first one I was ever in, which was You Can't Take It With You. and to be in that group of people and experience that, there's, you know, all of the rehearsals and everything, and then how the character starts to change once you start to trust everybody and you start to trust what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. That allows you to not focus on the same things that you would normally, or that you would think that you would. Now you're focused on who you are and the character you are. And now the lines that you've said, you know, 40 times feel different. And it's usually like, you know, a couple of weeks before the show where you start to discover things in the script that you didn't realize were there, even after all those readings.
Oh, how neat.
And then that's like it's like a metaphor for the depth of the church as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's like, I feel like I need to pull all that together, but I mean,
and you must, and I don't know. But now the way you're talking about it makes me think that at some point in there, the whole group of everybody must come together and feel different about each other, too. You become, I'm guessing, like a family.
Absolutely. There's no doubt. That's why
that shared experience that changes all of you at the same time. And that's like the church too, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then at the end of every play I've ever been in, you have that bittersweet moment where, you know, the sweet moment is, oh my goodness, I have all my time back. And the bitter part is, oh my gosh, what am I going to do without these people?
Mm-hmm.
Because it really is that strong.
Yeah.
You know,
well, you expressed it well, because I was really kind of seeing it when you were talking about it. I suddenly thought, oh my gosh. And then you're all coalescing more, because at the same time as you're feeling that, they're also feeling it too back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. It's an incredible experience. But it's the same as you in the dancing and the guys in the movie mm-hmm. with the dancing. It's the same. And then the community as a faith community.
Well, and what you said about also that about 2 weeks in, because you can all trust each other, you're suddenly seeing different things in the script. And it made me think about when they all go to just a place where people are just dancing. And Mr. Sugiyama is, you know, so nervous. And that's when the teacher, the older teacher, is saying, don't worry about the steps so much. Dancing is more than the steps. Dance for the joy of the music. And he's like, I don't, you know, he's not saying it. He's like, oh, yes. Standing there all clenched up tight, you know. And she says, oh, so she tells him about seeing The King and I when Deborah Carr takes Jule Brynner's hands and they just kind of hop around to the music. And she starts doing that with him because they're playing that song. And she says, this is when I learned that I wanted to dance. And this is the feeling, the joy of the dance. And they're just doing it and not worrying about it. And the one time that my husband and I have actually done something outside of the dancing lessons was at my oldest brother-in-law's, I guess it was his 70th birthday party. And he had a band playing all the old Jimmy Buffett songs and everything from his college days. And so everybody was having a great time. And I said, Tom, let's go up there. You know, they say you could do these various dances because neither of us has ever been comfortable doing extemporaneous dance, basically. Mm-hmm. We're always too embarrassed. Yeah. And I said, we could do the foxtrot to this. We could do the rumba to this. And he goes, okay. I mean, that's very atypical for both of us. So we were both afraid. But once we started doing it, we weren't paying attention to those other people. We just were dancing and having fun with each other going, let's try this. Let's try that. And we stayed up there for about four dances and had the best time. And we probably looked like idiots, but we did not care. And it was so much fun. And it was that same very small moment that you're talking about. You're talking about it on a bigger level, but no, you know,
it's really the same.
It was that dance for the joy of the music. And it's not just of course the joy of the music, it's the joy of the partnership and, you know, all that.
Exactly.
Which is why it was so touching that this also winds up translating into improving his marriage.
Yeah, at the end, that's exactly right. But yeah, we definitely want to talk about the concept of an affair because Sugiyama is spending an awful lot of time away, away from home, and so his daughter and his wife, having been told by the private investigator what's going on, they show up to a competition.
I don't think they knew he was dancing in it, did they? Because the daughter's like, oh, I guess they did. Because the daughter's
there's
dad.
Yeah. Right. They knew he was going to be there. They just didn't know he was going to be there at that exact moment.
That's right. He said the detective said they've got to see it to understand.
Right. So they're watching and, you know, he gets to do the first dance, you know, without knowing that they're there. Mm-hmm. And he's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets just a few minutes into that second dance and he could hear his daughter yell, way to go, dad, or something like that. And he's looking for her. Now he's like, then he messes up because he's not with his partner anymore.
Right.
And, but then after that, the conversation between him and his wife that evening at home was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was going to say she wasn't upset, but she was upset, but she wasn't upset the same way that she thought she was going to be upset. It was almost like she was surprised by her feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, previously she had, you know, muttered in the house, you know, how he was selfish and he was, even though she said, you know, he needed to go do something, right. Which he did, but she said, well, thank goodness it's not an affair.
Yeah.
Right. But then he says, well, it it's really the same. Right.
The husband says it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The husband is the one who says, this is an affair because of how I was fully engaged with this other group, not with you.
Yeah, he doesn't explain it. He just says, yeah, it was really an affair.
Yeah, so he's not saying that he was off, you know, in bed with another woman.
Mm-mm.
But it was emotionally, he was detached.
And then he says, I'm never doing it again. Don't
right.
worry.
Yeah.
Well, he's also been shamed because of the accident that he had. But,
exactly, yeah.
And his wife doesn't know what to think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's, oh, okay, you're home, but now you're not happy anymore.
Right, right. So, yeah, so that's just an interesting thought, you know, with marriage.
Yeah.
How it's a difficult line. It's a difficult line to walk. I mean, you know, you're married and I'm married and not to each other. And, and we spend, you know, some time doing this. It's not a hell of a lot of time, but it's time doing this.
But we exchange emails in between time about this or other things.
Sure. Yeah.
I often, since my husband and I work together, I'll often go in and go, Scott just emailed me and said this, you know, and and it's, we spend enough time talking to each other, and you're a good enough friend to me that I one time did ask him, I said, you know, there is nothing to be jealous of, but you're not jealous, are you? Because I just want to make sure this is all right. And he's like, no, are you kidding? You know, I get it. And I went, okay, just want to be sure. Cause not everybody would.
And I've had the exact same conversation here on this end.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a couple of years. Maybe I ought to have it again. But it was like, you know, is this okay? You know, and we're always talking, you know, just like you. You know, I don't work with my wife, but, you know, in the evening or something, I'll say, oh, Julie picked this movie. Like this movie in particular, she said, oh, I saw this. I watched it on Netflix, you know, when we lived in an apartment.
Oh, okay.
You know, that was about, I don't know, 2.5 years ago or so.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, it's all open and everything, but you know, so yeah, I think that's needed. You know, you've got things that, you know, obviously make your spouse happy, and you don't want to keep them away from those things, but at the same time, you have a life together. You know,
that's the thing. You have that life together, and it's very telling that when she goes to the detective and she's explaining this. And she says, well, I really don't think it's an affair. And he says, well, then why don't you just ask him?
Yeah.
And she says, well, she's afraid of the answer. She says, because he's so serious that if it is an affair, she would know it meant he didn't love her anymore. Meaning he couldn't just fling it off, you know, a sexual affair with somebody. It would be something deeper of the heart.
Mm, yeah.
And indeed, that's what he means when he's, you know, well, it is an affair.
Yeah. So it's almost as if neither of them quite see how to allow this to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's like for him, it's binary. It's this or that.
Yeah, all or nothing.
And for her, I don't know, how does she see it? At the beginning, she sees it as, you know, I'm very lonely. And but then she quickly sees, well, what I would love to have is a happy spouse. And if this makes him happy, that's great. But then the daughter says, well, why can't you do this together?
Yeah, why don't you teach her to dance?
Yeah. And that's really the key, I think.
Yeah, that was one of the things I didn't like about the movie. It was almost American style, the smart kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every so often she'd pop up with these, let me just tell you how things work. And the parents would go, oh, yeah, we'll do that. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's to me. This movie has very few flaws, in my opinion. But
yeah.
I didn't appreciate the kid that much. But, I just found it really interesting when you pointed out that they had used that word affair, that had just slipped by me. And I thought, yeah, that's kind of the essence of the beginning of a problem. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a person. It's what is making you less than fully invested in the relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And which is what the whole movie is about. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
How do you fully invest yourself in what you should immerse yourself?
Yeah.
In a sense, in something. I also really liked the part where, well, I didn't like the part, but there was a very touching part where there's, and again, I can't remember the fellow's name, but I can see his face. There's one of the students is big and fat. He's taking the classes because of diabetes. He's got glasses. He sweats all the time. And he loves dancing. He is so joyful when he just lets himself go. And there are a few moments where sometimes he's dancing in the background with somebody while a scene's going on. And I'd just be laughing because he's back there just dancing perfectly, but hamming it up, you know, just so wonderfully.
Yeah.
And the brash lady is talking about partnering with him while she's trying out these partners for the competition, and a mistake happens or something, and she gets really mad, and as is her way, she lashes out in anger, and she says, "You sweat all the time, you're stupid, I hate you, you're weird," you know, all these mean things that are very accurate about what's wrong with him. And he just has a total breakdown right there. And he says, "I've known since I was a kid, everybody always made fun of me." And he says, "And this is the one thing that I love now. I feel I can be alive while I'm doing it. And now you tell me I'm weird now too." And his whole sense of self-worth is completely shattered. And of course, you know, people reassure him. The brash lady is, you know, like, "Oh, I always do this kind of thing. I'm sorry." And what it made me realize is it's bad enough in America that it's hard to stand up there and dance if you're not confident. You're really, and it made me realize that you're really showing something of your inner self that you don't show a lot. You're making yourself very vulnerable. And so insulting their dancing is insulting their selves, their inner person. And no wonder the Japanese have trouble with it, since they're more restrained about a lot of that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
But it's like the theater. You know, you're having to stand up there in front of everyone, and you can fail right out there in public, and dancing is the same way. And I hadn't really thought about that as just what you're showing when you stand up to dance.
Yeah. That's why stand-up comedians, really, I admire them so much.
Oh my gosh.
Because,
yes.
You know, at least when you're an actor, you're saying other person's lines, you know? There is a mental wall there, at least. But to get up there and just say things that are coming to your mind, or that you wrote earlier, that are that's you, you know? you're just 100% there, and you're, you know, in front of an audience hoping to entertain them. And, oh, I feel for people who fail at that, much
they
less
say,
I mean, the people that that succeed are just admirable.
Yeah. They say you have to just be prepared for continual rejection. And, wow, that would be so hard.
That would be really difficult.
Yeah. You have to be a certain kind of personality, I think. And, you know, I've told you before about how much we watch comedians in cars having coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have... There was one, and I can't remember what it was, where people were talking, the comedians were talking about rejection and standing up there. And I think it's this thing where they'll put together these little samplers of either stuff you haven't seen before. They'll pull stuff like eggs, and it's everybody talking about the eggs they're eating somewhere or that sort of thing. But this one was people talking about being able to stand up there and face rejection. And the only one who wasn't saying, "This is tough," was Jay Leno, who just said, "Well, I just viewed it as, well, I got to work on it harder." And I mean, he must have felt it, but he looked at all, he always looked at it as, well, it's a learning experience. He goes, "You go on after Richie Pryor, you learn what rejection is." He goes, "He has worn that crowd out, your stuff is like nothing next to his." And he goes, "I was just always so interested. I was always taking notes after those."
How about that?
I felt if I could do 15 minutes after Richie, I was okay. I was like, wow, I would have been curled up in a corner, but
that's incredible. You know, they tell you the same thing in writing too. You know, you need to be able to take a rejection letter. You know, when you're a writer, they're going to, So, and the people that succeed seem to have Jay Leno's attitude. They're like, okay, well, I was rejected here. sometimes, you know, if an editor will give you a reason, that's great. You know, if they give you a reason, you're actually doing really well. If an editor takes the time to give you a reason, like, you know, I didn't like how this character did that. I mean, it's almost as if they're saying, you know, I was interested in the rest of it. Most of the time you just get a form letter, but, the thing is, you know, the writers that have Jay Leno's attitude that, okay, this is a learning experience. This piece that I wrote that got rejected, you know, I'll send it somewhere else. Or, you know, if you've run out of places to send it, then you've learned in the experience of writing this one. And, you know, hopefully you're writing your next one while that one's making the rounds.
Yeah.
So
there is some ebook on Amazon and it's free. And darned if I could remember the name of it, but it's by somebody like Scott Nicholson or somebody who's now a well-known writer or well-known enough that his name rang a bell for me. I think he might write thrillers. But anyway, he says when he was getting started writing, he read all the pieces of advice he could, magazine articles and books and everything. And he said, when I'm a famous writer, I'm going to put together all of these into a book so it's easy to find them. And he said then he got to be pretty well-known and he was going to live up to that. And he went back and went, oh, most of them were crap. You know, they were not good advice at all. He says, but I'm now turning to all these authors who do have good advice. And so this is a book of all these essays by everybody from him to Mer Lafferty to all these various people. And they're fairly short. And his starts off with, and it might be in the introduction, even though he's talking about his 80 rejection letters he got before he sold one story. And he says, you got to get used to rejection. And he says, I might have the biggest rejection file of anybody because I just kept going.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't sent enough stories out to get 80. But I'm, you know, I'm on my way. I've got a couple. Yep.
Okay, then.
So, yeah.
And one published, right?
Yeah, one success. Yeah. And a couple of rejections.
That's not bad.
Yeah, and I'm about to jump in the pool hip deep again. Well, I have already, so.
All right.
It's time. Things feel right.
Okay. Well, I need some new reading material, so.
Excellent.
You know, get busy.
You bet. Typing away. But yes, so this movie though is, so I thank you for picking it. You know, it was moving. I thought it was funny, and now that we've talked about it, I even feel a further depth to it.
I'm so glad you liked it.
I was like I could feel it was there, but I just couldn't quite touch it. But you know, sometimes it's funny. You have a reason why you like something, but you can't quite understand it until you're in a community talking to someone about it.
That's funny.
You know, that's what I've learned. Doing podcasts is, you know, and I've said this before and it sounds flippant, but I really mean it, that, you know, when I finish something now, reading something, if I don't talk to somebody about it, it doesn't feel like it's finished anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's this depth that you attain by talking to someone about it. Yeah. So anyway,
I agree.
Yeah.
And In fact, I've learned enough that we got done watching and I was like, wow, I really loved that. And I just picked it because I could remember the marriage part of it mostly. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, I haven't watched it in a long time. Let's try this. And then we got done. I was like, I have no idea if we're going to have more than 10 minutes worth of stuff to say, but we always
here
seem
we are.
To. So
we could speak for 15 minutes just on what's going on in the background in this movie. I mean, if you just watch the background, what's going on behind the actors as things goes on. The thing that leaps to my mind, you talked about that large fellow dancing in the background. There was one scene where they were practicing for the competition. And in the background was the Latin dancer guy, Aoki.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his hands on a pillar.
Yes, and was just
like,
down.
And he was just moving his feet. That for some reason I just laughed. I can't even remember what was going on in that scene.
It was kind of a frantic dance that he was doing against
and
the pillar.
Talk about and the joyful. Whole thing, I mean, he was so joyful it was painful.
And the whole thing with Aoki where he says, because they'll meet in the bathroom.
Yeah.
and yeah. talk about steps and stuff. It's not that they're doing it on purpose. Then he says, you want to watch out. You're giving too much away. Your posture's too good. You need to slouch more. Mm-hmm. You know, your steps are too precise. You're giving it away and people will think you're a pervert, you know.
Oh my gosh.
And so, and he says, the thing is this changes you. And you never notice it. It's never the people themselves who notice it. And as he leaves, he's turning a corner with his spinning on his foot and his erect posture. And Mr. Sugiyama says, the people who are doing it never notice they're doing it. And I was like, that's why he does that weird thing.
Wow.
It's part of a dance thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, so there's all kinds of little wonderful moments
yeah,
like that.
They really are. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it bears watching again.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's, I brought it up at that book club, and three people immediately said, I love that movie. I've watched it three times on Netflix.
How so funny. You know, when I was searching for information about this movie, I found a Richard Gere movie called Shall We Dance? Is that mm-hmm. a remake?
Mm-hmm.
It is. Okay.
With Susan Sarandon and Jennifer Lopez, and mm-hmm. I never watched it. I looked at those people and went, I just can't make myself watch it. They cannot possibly match this movie. They're going to Hollywoodize it. I can't help it. And I think, I mean, Roger Ebert, who loved this movie so much that he put it into his, like, Overlooked Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. He said he still gave that Shall We Dance, the Richard Gere one, 3 stars. He goes, it's not the same, but it is good in itself.
Hmm.
That still didn't make me want to watch it. But
okay.
But he's fair. You That's know, he's right. more fair than I can be. It made a ton of money in this country.
Oh,
I think we were looking it up going, it must have been terrible. And it made a lot of money. I don't know if that means it was terrible or not, but.
Yeah, interesting was, you know, looking it up on Wikipedia, I guess that the main actress, her name is Tamio Kusakari. I hope that I've done that right. But I guess she married the director after this film,
yeah.
Masayuki Suo.
I thought that was so sweet.
Yeah, and
also.
Then I found this little snippet that said that they were going to be reunited. The main actor named Koji Yakusho. And Tamio Kusakari and Masayuki Suo were going to make another movie together. And I guess that has already happened.
Oh, okay.
Looking it up, it looks like it's called The Terminal Trust.
Well, that's kind of interesting because we looked the actors up right afterward and it looked as if, again, I've never remembered this lady's name. The brash actress was in a lot of stuff.
Oh, cool.
A lot of TV and that sort of thing afterwards, series and stuff like that. And the main actor, Mr. Sugiyama, he's one of those guys where he's just steadily working all the time in movies and things. And I think at the time that Mai was a really well-known TV actress, so she was really popular.
Oh, cool.
When the movie came out.
Gotcha.
But I think she's just recently begun having parts again, so.
Well, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was neat. Mesmerizing woman.
I know. She had those big eyes.
Big eyes, yeah. Very tall, very, you know, super posture. I mean, she was clearly a dancer.
She looked like a ballerina.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Very nice.
Have you ever seen Strictly Ballroom?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's also on my list for us to watch sometime. That is one of our family's all-time favorite movies.
Oh, really?
And for anybody who has seen that and has seen this, it was kind of funny because you can't escape the comparison to Strictly Ballroom, which is Australian and way over the top compared to this. But for a Japanese movie, this is probably fairly over the top in talking about that world. So it was funny to see it translated into that culture, you know, for that sort of a dance culture.
Right, right.
So.
Well, good. Yep. Ballroom dancing.
Oh,
good
Good
for your health.
Your health, your heart, your soul.
And remember always that a weak first step transmits nothing.
Yes. That was beautiful.
Why, thank you. I made it up. No.
Oh, good. All that theater training is really paying off.
That's right. I love it. I love it. Well, great. Okay. Well, so what have we got? Yeah, what do we got coming up? We have Valley of Bones by Michael Gruber.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that's yep, right. Yep. Cool. And then I finally picked a movie. I don't know why it takes me so long. Frequency is what I picked. It's a movie with Jim Caviezel and
Dennis Quaid.
That's it. Yep.
I love that movie. In fact, I believe it's in our pool room already.
Oh, good. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. It's definitely in my pool room. I do love that movie.
Yeah.
And then after that is a religious selection. And it was my pick this time. And I picked St. Francis of Assisi by G.K. Chesterton.
Okay.
One of my favorite books. I enjoyed it very much.
I liked his book on St. Thomas Aquinas, and I've always meant to go back and read the St. Francis of Assisi. So that's good. Perfect.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And I have to warn anybody who hasn't read it and is thinking about it, the way Chesterton seems to write nonfiction is he assumes that you already know the basic facts.
Yep.
I don't know if this book is that way, but the Thomas Aquinas and the Dickens books certainly were.
Mm-hmm.
He just kind of writes around all the stuff that you should already know. That Dickens was 10 and worked in a boot or an ink factory. Come on. That sort of thing.
Right.
So
gotcha.
Every time I've read one of those sort of books, I've had to stop and go find a basic biography or whatever and read that first and then go back to Chesterton.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
It was always wonderful.
So. Do you know of another Francis biography?
I would say the one, in fact, I did read the one by Louis DeWohl, if that's how you say his name, DeWohl.
Okay.
He wrote a lot of biography, historical fiction sort of biographies of saints in the maybe 1950s and 60s, and they're so well done. Really gripping stories.
Mm, okay.
He makes them very entertaining, but they can be, I don't know. I'm looking to see if I have one on my bookshelf that I could grab. I think they tend to be about 300 pages or so.
Okay.
But they tell really usually multiple stories that kind of weave together to give you a real sense of the times that the saint was in also.
Oh, that's nice.
So they're good that. Yeah, they're really good that way.
Okay, looks like his book on St. Francis of Assisi is The Joyful Beggar.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wonderful. It's available from Ignatius Press, it looks like.
Yep. And if you want the super fast version, I guess Wikipedia or Catholic Encyclopedia or something online.
My wife went to Santa Fe for a conference, and she brought me back, and I'm holding it right now, a wooden St. Francis. It's gorgeous. It's about, I don't know, I would say 10 inches tall. And, man, I love it. It's just chiseled out of a block of wood. A couple of birds that are attached to him.
I was going to say, does he have animals or,
yeah.
Okay.
That's how I knew who it was. She handed it to me, and the birds were separate. You know, they're also made out of wood. And I was holding it, and I was going, how interesting. It's like a priest. And then she gives me the birds. I was like, oh, that's St. Francis. How awesome.
Symbols are so important.
Yes, I love it.
I'll have to take a picture.
Yes, I will. I'll send you
one. Put it on the post.
Yeah, cool. All right. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll see you all soon.
Yeah, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.